picking on that red guitar. So gather round, now gather round, chill and be down. Well, just get down, chill and get loud. Well, you can be loud, yeah, and be proud. And you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud. Well, because South's gonna do it again.
And welcome back to the Jeff Force Show. Let's talk 106.5, 36 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. Hope everyone's doing well out there. Still to come on the program the next hour, we'll hear from State Senator Dan Roberts from up near Birmingham. Talk about some COVID-19 efforts, or at least economic stimulus efforts. He thinks it can be done at the state level. We'll talk to him. That's in the next hour. Also, from WENN, Dale Jackson is with us for his weekly visit. And then finally, in the 11 o'clock hour, you'll stick around for Congressman-elect Barry Moore from the Wiregrass. Going to tell us about how his effort is underway, getting settled in to his new position as a United States Congressman. Speaking of United States Congressman, it's always a pleasure to bring on my next guest. Represents the fine folks in the 6th Congressional District. Congressman Gary Palmer is on the line. Congressman, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Thanks for making time for us. Let's get right into it. First off, kind of watching from where you're at right now, the direction the election is heading and you know, with Georgia looming, what's your assessment of where things are at right now with what had happened on November 3rd?
Well, I'm very concerned about how this is all going to end. I am convinced that this was a fraudulent election, Jeff, and that millions of voters are going to be disenfranchised, and we're going to allow five states to basically take the election away from the other 45. Obviously, not all 45 voted for the president, but regardless of who you voted for, when you have massive fraud, it undermines your right to self-determination.
I mean, is it just kind of where they extended election day and changed the rules of the game, it seems? Because if you didn't have the rules of the game changed like they were to favor what I would think is favor Joe Biden, but, you know, the mail-in voting and even the lax absentee voting in some places, we're looking at a re-election for Donald Trump.
What you have are unconstitutional acts, and obviously, Pennsylvania is ground zero for this because the governor and the Pennsylvania Supreme Court usurped the authority of the legislature. Constitutionally, only the legislature of the various states have the authority to set election rules. But you had Pennsylvania's state Supreme Court and their governor, by executive order, making these changes that fundamentally impacted the election in Pennsylvania. Same thing happened, I think, in Michigan and in New York. Although New York's not in dispute on the presidential election, there's a congressional race there that is yet to be called, in which the Republicans leading by 350-some-odd votes. And Cuomo made an executive order that is in violation of the Constitution. So I'm very concerned, and I'm concerned that some of the state's attorneys general are not standing up for their state's rights in the context of when you have five or six states conduct fraudulent elections in the only election that's truly a national election, that's a presidential election, it does harm to everybody else. It basically makes the Electoral College irrelevant. And I think the state attorneys general should be getting together to look at a class action arguing that under the 14th Amendment, this violates the Equal Protection Clause, and it also violates the Guarantee Clause of the Constitution that guarantees to the states, to every state, a Republican, and that's Republican with a small r, form of government. And that's what free and fair elections are about, so that we can have a republic.
Congressman, do you think when you have the joint session to certify the electoral votes, do you foresee maybe some members stepping out and voting not to certify those votes?
I haven't heard anyone talking about that. I think what the Trump legal team needs to do is to pursue the evidence, the substance of the fraud, not just the process. And the process involves the refusal to allow observers to be present when ballots were open, when the envelopes were open. And there is substance, Jeff, that I think needs to be taken into account. First of all, it's the envelopes. Now, I don't know if I told you this in a previous interview, but I sent a letter to the Postmaster General Louis DeJoy requesting that all mail ballots, whether they were absentee ballots or vote by mail ballots, have affixed to them a legible postmark date on every ballot. And I got a response back from the United States Postal Service in detail about how they were going to ensure that that happened. So you've got the post office saying that all post offices nationwide would make sure that there was a postmark affixed to the envelope. But if you go in and did an audit and looked at all the envelopes and saw that there were God knows how many that didn't have a postmark, that's evidence of illegal voting. And the federal law requires that all election materials be preserved for 2 years. So all of those envelopes should be available for an audit. And then you go another step and do the an audit of the affidavits, because the affidavit should come with the ballot. And it doesn't have to connect to the actual voter. What you need to be able to do is to look at those affidavits to determine whether or not the name on the affidavit is actually an eligible voter. This is a big deal because 2012, the Pew Center on the States published a research paper and said there were 24 million. Now, that's one of every eight registered voters is no longer a valid or a registration. That's 24 million. 1.8 million of those are people who are dead. So if we could audit the affidavits and see, first of all, whether or not the affidavit was even signed, and then if it was signed by someone who is not a registered voter or is deceased or doesn't live in the state or the signature doesn't match the signature on file, after a while you can make your case that this was a fraudulent election. I kind of got in the weeds there, but that's the substance.
Well, tell me, is this going to be in time? I mean, the clock is ticking here, and there's deadlines, and there's lots of pressure, which, you know, getting the ball across the goal line here seems just, you know, seems like the clock is going to run out run out on these guys.
This is why the attorneys general need to file this as a class action, because when one state sues another state, when I say file as a class action, that would be, you know, multiple states or individual states like Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, their AGs getting together and suing Pennsylvania, suing Georgia, suing Michigan, suing Wisconsin, and maybe even Nevada, and arguing that those states did harm, then that goes straight to the Supreme Court. When one state sues another, you don't go through this long, drawn out, start with the local federal court, and then go to the circuit, and then go to the Supreme Court. Go straight to Supreme Court.
So that circumvents a lot of the time there. But you know, the biggest complaint I hear from a lot of people, at least on this radio show, about all of this is they're not going to see as elections as legitimate, as your vote doesn't really count. There's ways of rigging an election, and why even bother? Which, to me, for future elections, particularly this one coming up in Georgia with these two U.S. senators, but beyond that, even if you have a certain segment of the Republican voter base that just doesn't think it's worth it, that seems to have a very profound chilling effect on what could happen.
I don't want to meet the person that is going to give up. I'm not giving up, and nobody should give up. Nobody should concede that to anybody, and we know for a fact that we can have honest elections. Florida did it. And remember all the crap that we went through with Florida in 2000. They got their act together. Ohio did it. Texas did it. There's stuff that we need to do in Alabama. We should not be waiting till after election day to count absentee ballots. That's just an invitation for fraud. Everything should be in on election day, and everything counted and reported on election day, like Florida did and Ohio and Texas. So for any of your listeners out there who are going to use this as an excuse not to go vote, that's just a surrender to the left.
Well, do you think that, you know, the way Florida was able to get something done and make their election system work a lot better, it seems to be now in 2020 to be a very heavy lift because one side doesn't trust the other side. And I think we're still a pretty evenly dividedly split country, that you're going to have a scenario where the sides agree on a voting system, but neither that to me just seems like it's implausible.
We may have to get the court involved because, you know, like I said, the Constitution allows every state to set their own election laws. And that's from dog catcher to the U.S. Senate. And if a state decides that they want to have a dishonest system to elect their dog catcher, their mayor, their governor, whatever, then, you know, they'll get dragged into court from time to time, but they'll do that. But there's only one election that is truly a national election where a dysfunctional or illegal voting system can impact other states, and that's a presidential election. And I think that that's where we're going to have to step in and address this. And I don't know if it will require a constitutional amendment, but I think we ought to put enormous pressure on the states to get their acts together like Florida did. And Florida, as you know, is widely perceived to be a purple state, but they got their act together. Ohio did. There's no reason why citizens from both parties should be demanding honest elections, because consequences of not having honest elections will be horrible for the future of this country.
Joined by Congressman Gary Palmer here on the program for just a few more minutes. Congressman, I've been listening to Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy a lot lately, and he seems to think with all the disagreement on the Democratic side of the aisle in your chamber that they're going to have a hard time, or Pelosi's going to have a very hard time keeping it together. He thinks in the end that's going to benefit Republicans, and the Republicans will have the ability, as he says, to control the floor for some of these next 2 years because of all the disagreement and infighting on the Democrat side. What do you think of that?
Well, I think Kevin is correct. Right now we're at 210 members. There's three more races that have yet to be called in which the Republican is leading. And so we could be at 213 if these votes in Pennsylvania that came in after 8 o'clock are ultimately invalidated. We could be over 213, and I think it's going to make it very difficult for Pelosi to move things without because she's got members of her own party that are not going to go along with some of the stuff that they did like they did last time. What my concern is, Jeff, is that they're going to change the rules. And this kind of gets in the weeds again, but there's a thing called a motion to recommit. And what that means is that when a bill is coming to the floor for final passage, the minority party has an opportunity to make a motion to recommit the bill. And what it really is you offer an amendment that basically replaces their bill. And when we were in the majority, they never succeeded in passing a motion to recommit. We did it 10 times in the last Congress. And I think what they're trying to figure out is how they can change that rule so that we cannot bring a motion to recommit to the floor. Because she's got members that I promise you don't want to have to vote against one of our NPRs. The other thing that really bothers me and concerns me is that she wants to eliminate our presence on the floor and how people vote by text. And we've got a lawsuit already in the courts arguing that voting by proxy should not count for establishing a quorum. And that's going to make it even tougher for her to establish a quorum when our numbers are now so high.
She's got a lot of problems on her side, and I think they're just with such the trying to be all things to everybody. Big tent party has its advantage maybe in quantity, but keeping everybody kind of on the same page, it seems to be a very difficult thing to pull off. And I don't know if Pelosi's got She's impressive in some ways, but I don't know if her time hasn't run out in that regard.
Well, let's just say we get to 212. If six Democrats decided not to support her for speaker, she has to have 218 votes. It's not a majority vote. She has to have 218. Six Democrats could really mess her up. And it could be six of the squad. It could be six sensible people. I don't know. So she's got quite a task ahead of her trying to herd her cats.
It's right there on the margins for sure. Carson, we got to leave it there. We're out of time, but thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Well, Jeff, as always, I appreciate you having me on, and I hope I didn't nerd out on people too much this morning.
Don't worry. We do that a lot here on this program. Congressman Gary Palmer, ladies and gentlemen. Got to get a commercial break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
There's always a stage and a beautiful babe to squeeze my life. In my simple way, guess you could say I'm living in the